In earlier centuries, only military men wore mustaches, and they associate mustaches with killing. They prize peace and want nothing to do with war. So, they are conscientious objectors? Hannah nodded. My mother was the perfect example of a soft answer, turning away wrath. Though in Hannah's case, those teachings were what had kept her under Reese's fist too long. She focused on making her stitches even and small. She wouldn't think about the sound of her mother's laugh, or the way her mother's auburn hair caught the sunlight. She wouldn't remember the way Mom's tender hands, rough from hard work, would stroke Hannah's hair at night before bed. The needle blurred in her vision, and she blinked hard. Did she only work by hand? No. She had a treadle sewing machine that she used for the piecework. The actual quilting was done by hand. I'll talk about that when I get to the chapter on the carpenter patch. We prize things made with hard work, but we use tried and true technology. Many use a treadle sewing machine for the piecework. Angie frowned. I've always heard quilts made by hand are more valuable. When sewing machines first became available, it was a status symbol to have one to use for quilting. Around 1900, during the colonial revival period, interest in hand quilting grew, a return to nostalgia. But Amish women are practical. Good quilts are about design and excellent fabrics. Mam always chose her fabrics with care and paid top dollar for them. Angie glanced around the bedroom. Does your cousin have any I can see? They were all stolen the night of the murders. She stopped. You know, the quilt that was found over the body should still be somewhere. It could have been released to the family once the evidence was collected from it. I'm going to look for it. Angie sprang off the bed. I'll come with you. She followed Hannah down the hall. This is a big place. 4 bedrooms up here and another one downstairs. This is another guest room. The large room held a double bed, a dresser, a futon that could be made into another bed, and a crib. Even with all the furniture, it still had floor space to spare. Why is there so much furniture in here? An entire family could stay here. We often have visitors who stay a few days. Hannah glanced around the room. She hadn't had time to go from room to room and see what changes Sarah had made. The quilt Hannah sought wasn't on the bed. She opened the closet and pulled out a blanket chest. Seeing the cedar chest made by her father, she remembered that her mother's keepsake box had always resided inside. She lifted the lid and inhaled the aroma of fragrant cedar. The chest held quilts and an assortment of baby clothes. She began to lift out the quilts one by one. They'd all been made by Sarah. She recognized her friend's favorite log cabin pattern. "What are you doing?" Sarah stood in the doorway. Her brows were raised and spots of red blotched her cheeks. Hannah refused to let Sarah intimidate her. I'm looking for the quilt that was over my family when I found them. I wanted to look at it again. I've never seen it before that night, and it was clearly made by my mother. All of this belonged more to her than it did to anyone else. Even Luca didn't have as much right to the personal effects as she did. Sarah bit her lip. It's in Naomi's room. It's a child's quilt. I thought she would enjoy it. You gave your child a quilt that had been on her dead relatives? Angie's voice resounded with horror. It was laundered, of course. A practical response, but Hannah shuddered. They were taught to put others first and avoid conflict. But Hannah could tell Sarah didn't like her snooping by the way she kept biting her lip and clutching her hands together. Which room is Naomi's? Hannah moved toward the door. Sarah stepped out of the way. Just across the hall. Please don't wake her. Hannah reached the other door in 5 steps and peered inside. She caught her breath at the sight of the quilt on a rack at the end of the bed. The hall light shone on it. Her memory hadn't done it justice. It almost seemed as though the red hummingbirds in the pattern stitching hovered over the black background. It seemed 3-dimensional. Seeing the quilt was like catching a glimpse of her mother. She found herself on her knees by the quilt rack, pulling the quilt to her face. She inhaled, but there was nothing left of her mother's essence, only the scent of fresh air from hanging on the line. When she got up, she realized her cheeks were wet. So were Sarah's. The two women appraised each other. In Sarah's eyes, Hannah saw her own helpless yearning for a time that would never come again. A regret for years lost and never regained. A knowledge that there was nothing either of them could do about it. Sarah averted her eyes and went to the rack. She lifted the quilt, folded it with steady precision, and placed it in Hannah's hands. "This should be yours." Hannah's upbringing caused her to open her mouth to give it back, but she realized Sarah was right. It did belong with her. She was the only child left of Patricia and Abe Schwartz. Even Lucas' children weren't their grandchildren. "Thank you," she whispered. She resisted the urge to bury her face in the quilt again. "What about Mom's keepsake box?" Fear returned to Sarah's eyes. "What does it look like? A box? About so big?" She measured a space with her hands about a foot wide. "It's inlaid wood with a hummingbird design. Her grandfather made it. Have you seen it? It was always in the blanket chest." "Where did you see it last?" Hannah could see that the ping-pong of questions was designed to avoid a direct reply to the pointed query. "You have to have seen it, Sarah. I know it was here." Sarah dropped her gaze. "Yes," she answered. "It's in our bedroom." She turned and left the room. Hannah exchanged a quick glance with Angie, then followed Sarah. She dropped the quilt off in her bedroom, laying it reverently on the bed, then went downstairs, where she found Sarah in the master bedroom, rooting through a shelf in the back of the closet. This was the first time since returning to Park County that Hannah had been in her parents' bedroom. The same bed, with a plain headboard, was shoved against the far wall. "Here it is." Sarah emerged from the closet with her cap askew. She held the box out toward Hannah. Hannah reached for it, her fingers grazing Sarah's. The contact made her glance in her friend's face. Sarah looked ashen. Hannah didn't understand what could be so upsetting about the box. "Thanks," she said. "I must get ready for bed." Sarah bolted for the door. Hannah carried the keepsake box back upstairs to her room. She couldn't think here with the reminders of her parents all around. Angie was already working on her lists again. She barely looked up when Hannah sat on the bed and raised the lid to the box. A faint melody tinkled out. Angie tipped her head to one side and listened. "What's that song?" "Land de Berge, Land am Strom." It means land of the mountains, land on the river. It's the Swiss national anthem. "It's beautiful. So is the box." Hannah stroked the patina of the lid. "It's from Switzerland. My grandfather made it for her when she was a child." The contents were from another life. Hannah had always loved going through it and having her mother explain everything. There were theater tickets to Hair and tickets to a Beatles concert. Angie picked up the Beatles tickets and stared at them, then glanced at Hannah. "What gives?" "She was a hippie until she met my father." "Wow. Talk about culture shock. Free love and all that, and then going into the Amish culture?" "I think she relished it. And she'd lived on a commune for 3 years with no electricity or running water. The structure helped give her meaning," she said. "Did everyone realize where she'd come from?" Hannah shook her head. "I don't think so. She was so eager to fit in, to please that." Did she ever miss her old life? If she did, she never said so. Hannah sifted through the contents, letters that she'd never been allowed to read, a tennis bracelet, a Seiko watch, several earrings, and a class ring. She frowned. "I don't see her ring in here." "What ring?" "Her mother's engagement ring. She told me it was worth a fortune. She had it tucked away here and never got to wear it. She slipped it on sometimes when we were alone, just to connect with her mother, I think. But she never let me wear it. She didn't want me to yearn for things that had no lasting value." Hannah lifted everything out of the box and went through each item, carefully shaking out the letters. The ring was gone. "When did you see it last?" "About 2 weeks before she died. It's got to be here." Could Sarah have taken it? But why? She would have no use for it. She'd never be able to wear it. And Luca wouldn't allow her to sell it. Could one of the girls have gotten in here and taken it out to play with it? It seemed unlikely. Amish children were taught respect from a very early age. I'll have to ask Sarah about it. Her gut clenched at the thought. Sarah might think she was accusing her of theft. She put all of the items back in the box, though she lingered over the letters. She wanted to read them for as long as she could remember. "When you're older," her mother had always said. The youth quilt caught her attention. She unfolded it and spread it out on the bed. "That's gorgeous," Angie said, getting up to take a closer look. "It looks like the birds are about to fly off the fabric. It's a solid black with just stitching as the only other color. I've never seen anything like it." "All Mom's quilts are unique. It's the way she uses color. And look at her tiny stitches. I've never been able to match their perfection." Angie leaned over to examine the quilt. "Oh, it's beautiful. Where did she learn?" "My dad's mother." Grubmutter took her under her wing, and Mom was so patient to learn it all. She used to paint before she married Dad. Afterwards, she poured all her artistic ability into her quilts. "I wish we had more of her quilts to feature in your book."
"Me too."
Angie went back to her chair. "Is there another one around here? Maybe some of her customers still have them."
"Oh, of course. We could get some of those. I wasn't thinking. I'd rather feature my mother's quilts if I can find them. She had a magnificent mariner's compass one. I think she sold it to the woman who owns the fabric store. We'll check there tomorrow."
Hannah couldn't wait to hold it. Maybe the woman would sell it to her. 18. The double nine patch quilt is one of the most traditional quilts, which is fitting when you remember that the traditions handed down through generations are supremely important to the Amish. Hannah Schwartz in The Amish Faith Through Their Quilts. Hannah's cell phone rang after Angie had gone to sleep. She answered it and whispered, "Hang on," before tiptoeing out into the hall. She slipped into the bathroom and shut the door. "Hello," she said. She'd been half asleep and hadn't checked the caller ID.
"Hi, hun," Reese said. "I hope I didn't wake you."
Hannah cleared her throat. "It's after midnight, Reese. Of course you woke me.
I was thinking about you. Come meet me at the road. We could go for a cup of coffee."
"No, leave me alone. Our marriage is over."
"Don't say that, hon. I don't want anything bad to happen to you. We have to get back together."
Hannah licked her dry lips. "Are you threatening me, Reese?"
"Of course not. It's just that bad things might happen if I'm not around to protect you."
"Bad things happen when I'm with you. No one has hit me in 5 years." His voice vibrated with anger.
"I told you that's in the past. I won't touch you. I've changed. I've converted."
"You're driving," she pointed out.
"It's just temporary. The bishop told me to sell everything. Until I get it sold, I'm driving it."
Hannah barely refrained from rolling her eyes.
"What's Demut mean?"
"Humility," he said promptly.
Score one for him. "How does that work out in life?"
Could he be telling the truth? Some of the districts weren't as restrictive as others. "Accepting God's will. And God doesn't want us to be apart, Hannah. God doesn't want you to beat me either, or to kill our daughter."
"You pushed me down the steps, Reese."
"You're wrong, hon. I was trying to catch you. I would never hurt you. You broke my nose, my arm. Why would I believe you now?" Was she remembering that night all wrong? But even if she was, he'd been liberal with his fist at other times. The loss of the baby was the final, tragic straw. "I'm warning you, Hannah. You'd better come back home, where it's safe."
Hannah shut off her phone without replying to his insistent demand. The hidden threat in his words made goosebumps break out on her skin. She rubbed the raised flesh on her arm. He wasn't going to intimidate her. Matt didn't want to be here. It had been late when he arrived, but even his fatigue didn't help him fall asleep. The lack of outside lighting deepened the shadows in the room. This was a bad idea. He tossed on the sofa. At least the hiss of the gas lights had been silenced. He had had no idea a lamp like that was so loud. Now the house echoed with silence. If there was a TV in the place, he'd turn it on and spend an hour of mindlessness. He forced himself to close his eyes and then began to drift. He dreamed of Annalise.
She was smiling as she ran through a field of flowers. He wanted to warn her not to smell them, but he couldn't speak. He came awake at the sound of a creak as loud as a shotgun in the dark. Matt thrashed out of the tangle of sheets and leaped to his feet. He listened for the sound to come again. There it was. He rubbed his eyes, and for a second he thought he might still be dreaming. Then the sound came a third time. It was the creak of the door in the kitchen. He hadn't heard anyone come down from upstairs. An intruder was in the house. He moved noiselessly across the room. There was no moon tonight, so not even moonlight illuminated the kitchen as he peered through the doorway. He thought he saw a dark figure pass in front of him. He leaped forward, and his hand touched fabric. There was someone here. He wrestled with the figure, neither of them saying a word, until they were both on the kitchen floor. He pinned the intruder to the linoleum. Only then did he realize he wasn't grappling with a man, but rather with the softness of a woman. Grabbing her wrists, he pinned them to the floor above her head.
"Get off me!"
Hannah's voice vibrated with anger.
"Are you crazy?"
He let go, as if the heat of her wrists seared his skin. Scrambling back, he helped her to her feet.
"What are you doing prowling around in the dark?"
"I didn't have a flashlight, and I couldn't sleep. I thought I'd have some milk." He reached over and fumbled to turn on the gaslight. The soft hiss came with the glow.
"You could have turned on the light."
"I didn't want to wake you." She stood in her bare feet. The peach cotton nightgown she wore covered her from neck to her ankles, but with her hair hanging down her back and her eyes smudged with sleep, he had never seen a more beautiful sight. He didn't like the way he was noticing things about her, like the way her hair glowed in the light and the way her mouth was shaped. For a second, he let himself imagine kissing those full lips. What was he thinking? He was smarter than to let physical attraction blind him. Besides, she'd never filed for divorce. Anger with himself made his voice gruff.
"Oh, yeah, I'm sleeping now."
She turned her head away, but not before he caught the glimmer of tears. What a jerk he was. He touched her arm.
"What's wrong?"
She pulled away, then brushed past him to open the gas refrigerator.
"Want some?"
"Sure." Taking out a jug of milk, she shook it, then poured two glassfuls. She handed one to him before sitting at the table.
"Why'd you shake it?"
"It's not processed. It's the real thing, so you have to mix the cream back into the milk." He slid out a chair beside her and took a cautious sip of the milk, finding it creamy and good. Good to focus on something other than watching her bring the rim of the glass to her mouth. She set the glass on the table and licked the cream from her lips. He watched in fascination.
"So what's wrong?"
Her sigh was soft. "Everything is so confusing. I don't know what to do, where to go for help. Reese called me a few minutes ago. He swears he's joined an Amish district."
"It's true. Blake went up to Shipshawana to investigate. He talked to the bishop. He's been attending there for a month."
She rocked back in her chair, and her shoulders hunched as though she were protecting herself from a blow.
"I can't believe it."
"What did he want?"
"What he always wants, for me to come back to him."
"Are you going to do it?" He'd seen it so often over the years, the abused woman going back to her abuser. He hoped Hannah had more courage than that. Reese would end up killing her, given the chance. Her head came up.
"I'm not going back. I'm done with abuse."
Her voice rang with conviction, and Matt actually believed she meant it. He sensed that a backbone of iron ran through Hannah. Sometimes trials did that, harden a person enough that they could face new adversity. She was tenacious, he'd say that much for her. She was still here looking for her daughter.
"Good for you,"
he said softly. He could drown in those golden brown eyes. Leaning forward, he propped his chin on his hand. "I won't let anything happen to you." He was close enough to catch a whiff of her fragrance, a light citrus of some kind. Maybe shampoo? Was it his imagination, or did she move closer by an inch or two? Even as he plucked her hand from the table, he wondered what he was doing. This wasn't professional, but her vulnerability drew him away. When was the last time he even went out with a woman? A year? Two? and he was attracted to so much more than her appearance. She was as tenacious as Ajax after ascent. Her soft eyes only masked a will and determination he couldn't help but admire. She let her hand stay in his, though her eyes widened. Maybe she thought he was just offering comfort, and that's what the gesture was, of course. He didn't mean anything else by it. He encapsulated her hand in both of his. If you're not afraid of Reese, why can't you sleep? How many foster parents are there in the county? What a question. Lots. I have no idea. Can you find out? Sure. But why? You know the picture I showed you of the child? She waited until he nodded. The quilt the little girl is sitting on is one that was stolen the night of the murders. He found his voice. Interesting. But lots of people bought quilts from your mother, didn't they?
Yes.
But she'd just finished this one. I recognized the fabric. It was in the cabinet the day she died.
So you're telling me you think these foster parents had something to do with your family's murder?
He tried to remember where Caitlin's quilt had come from. The information would be crucial. It had been a baby gift, and Annalise had kept track of that kind of stuff. Could it be in Caitlin's baby book? But where on earth had he put that? It's possible they at least know the murderer. How else could they get that quilt? Maybe he sold them over eBay, or sold them to any store. There doesn't have to be a connection. What a lame explanation. He was going to have to go home and look for that baby book.
Maybe.
She chewed on her bottom lip. I'll try to get a list of foster parents and check them out. It might take weeks, though.
You'd do that for me?
He was beginning to think he'd do most anything for her, except turn over his daughter. No wonder Reese was nuts about her. Hannah had a childlike quality mixed in with her beauty. It made a man want to be a hero for her sake. He let go of her hand. If he wasn't careful, he would be as mixed up as Reese. He rose. It's nearly two. We should get some rest.
Of course.
The warmth in her voice faded. The chair scraped on the linoleum as she pushed back from the table and rose. He hadn't meant to hurt her. She turned to go, but he reached out and took her arm. I'll do all I can for you, Hannah. He was closer than he realized. It would only take one small movement for her to be in his arms, even though he knew it wasn't smart. He tugged on her arm. The next moment her head was against his chest, and he was inhaling the sweet scent of her. He'd been right. The citrus fragrance was in her hair. Her small, soft form fit in his arms. It had been years since he'd held a woman, not since Annalise. His wife had always been a little tense, looking around like she was about to move on to the next item in her list. There was a stillness about Hannah that soothed him. He ran a hand over her long hair, and the heavy locks caught his fingers.
What's going on here?
Luca stood in the stairwell door. His hair was disheveled, and his shirt was only partially tucked into the waistband of his pants. Hannah jerked away and smoothed her hands over her nightgown.
I just came down for some milk.
I thought she was an intruder and tackled her, Matt said.
He knew he sounded lame when Luca's glower darkened.
It didn't look much like a tackle,
Luca said, his tone dry.
I think you'd better get to bed, Hannah.
Of course.
Hannah slipped past her cousin, her bare feet pounding up the wooden steps as though she were rushing to escape the devil himself. Luca said nothing until the bedroom door upstairs shut. Hannah is vulnerable. Please leave her alone.
I'm just here to protect her and find out who's targeting all of you and put him behind bars.
God exacts justice. It's not our place.
You don't want him caught?
Of course I want Hannah safe. But God will protect her.
Sometimes evil prevails, Luca.
That, too, is God's will.
Such a defeatist attitude annoyed Matt.
Then you think we should never work for justice here on earth?
We're told to forgive.
No matter the offense?
Yes. That was Hannah's biggest fault. She wanted justice. Even as a child, she struggled with this.
Don't we all?
It was Matt's own desire for justice that had led him to law enforcement.
I'm sworn to uphold the law, to put lawbreakers behind bars. I'm not a philosopher.
Our beliefs are not about philosophy, but about obeying God's command to forgive 70 times 7, no matter what the offense. We forgive those who are too weak to stand against the devil and his wiles. There but for the grace of God go we all. Luca had a point there. Matt knew his own weaknesses. Aren't you afraid of who is targeting your family? God's will be done. If it is my time, I'll go. But your wife, your children? Luca grimaced. It would be hard. But I know God is sovereign, and I accept that. Even pain can be for the glory of God. He's not going to get to any of you, especially Hannah. You're English. You know nothing about the things that matter most to her. The jab hurt. And you do. You're not acting like it. Luca's color mounted. I do only what's best for Hannah's soul. Matt believed him. He could see the man's earnest love for his cousin. And who was he to say Luca was wrong? Matt now recognized he was beginning to want her for himself. Hannah had an unrest in her, a sadness that might be cured only by returning to the bosom of her family and friends. Would meeting his mother tomorrow bring rest to Matt's soul? Wednesday morning. She'd been here a week. It seemed longer. From where she sat in the sitting room, Hannah could see her cousins at the kitchen table with Sarah, their blonde heads bent for silent prayer, with their small hands clasped together. How often had she done the same around the table with her parents? It was one of the things she missed the most. The children took their breakfast dishes to the sink and climbed the stools to wash them. Hannah forced herself to stay in the sitting room. Luca had already gone to the greenhouse, and Hannah hoped for a chance to talk to Sarah. Angie was upstairs working on a press release, and this morning would be the perfect time once Naomi and Sharon went outside. She didn't see Matt anywhere, and after last night's embarrassment, maybe that was best. Hours later, she still longed to experience the strength of his arms around her. But look where that had gotten her last time. She needed to keep her distance. Besides, she was still married, at least legally. She had hoped Reese would initiate divorce proceedings when she disappeared, but she should have known better. The girls finished the dishes, and Hannah heard Sarah tell them to go gather the eggs. Before Sarah could start another chore, Hannah hurried into the kitchen. "Can I talk to you for a minute?" Sarah's glance held a trace of wariness. "Yeah, I suppose. I have laundry to do. I am 2 days late with it, and Luca has no more clothes." "Oh, we can talk over laundry. It was always our favorite chore to do together. Remember how we used to throw suds at each other? Mom was so mad the day we had more suds on us than on the clothes. What were we, 13 or 14? Hannah had to smile at the memory. Sarah's lips twitched, but the smile never reached breaking point. "I cannot accept a favor from you." Hannah's smile vanished. "It's a favor to me that you would allow me to do my laundry, too. I didn't bring many clothes with me, and most of them are dirty." Sarah still looked uncertain, but finally she nodded. "Get your clothes." Hannah flew up the steps to gather the laundry. She yearned to see Sarah smile, to resurrect some tiny part of their friendship again. She took Angie's clothes with hers in a basket she found in the hall closet upstairs. By the time she got to the laundry room and enclosed back porch, Sarah had already fired up the gas-powered wringer washer. Hannah dumped the clothes onto the concrete floor and sorted them. Sarah kept glancing at her from under her lashes. She almost looked scared. Hannah wondered if Sarah feared she'd ask about the missing ring. The gasoline-powered washer chugged along, stirring up a fresh batch of suds. Before Hannah could talk herself out of it, she plunged her hand into the cold water and scooped up a handful of foam. She flung it onto Sarah's head, then started back for more. Giggles burst from her at the bewildered expression Sarah wore. White bubbles dripped down Sarah's hair onto her forehead, and she wiped them slowly. She didn't crack a smile, and Hannah became aware of how inappropriate her actions had been. She opened her hand and watched the suds slide back into the washer. "I'm sorry," she said. Sarah reached over and grabbed a dish towel lying on the pile of towels. She dabbed at the top of her head. "Here, I'll help you." Hannah took the towel and cleaned the suds from her friend's head. Sarah still hadn't said anything. Maybe she was too shocked. After all, they were a sedate 32 years old. Matrons didn't behave like giddy teenagers about to enter their room springa. Something cold hit her neck and slid down the back of her blouse. She stepped back to find Sarah with the sud still in her hand and a wicked smile on her face. "You suckered me in," Hannah said. She dove for the washing machine again, and 10 minutes later, there was more water on the floor and on each other than in the washer. "Oh, my," Sarah said, collapsing onto a cane-backed chair in the corner. "I'm glad the children didn't see their mother acting dumb. It's not foolish to have fun." Hannah wiped the suds from her cheeks. She pulled the chair from the other corner over next to Sarah. "I've missed you, Sarah."
"Yeah, and that is why you've come to visit so often and sent so many letters."
Sarah turned her back and began to run one of Lucas' shirts through the wringer on the washer. She dropped the garment into a basket and reached for another. "My husband wanted me to break all ties. He thought you'd coax me back. He knew how many times I cried to know I was shunned, and I wanted to please him, to be faithful to him.
Yet still you left him."
Sarah's voice held censure. Divorce was not accepted in the Amish community. A woman who left her husband would be shunned. Hannah stared into Sarah's face.
"He beat me, Sarah. He shoved me down the steps on purpose so my baby would die," she said, her voice hard. "Would you accept that? Just say it's okay and go on living with him, sharing his bed?"
Sarah bit her lip and looked away from Hannah's gaze.
"It is required by the Maidung to be faithful and respectful to my husband.
He would have killed me if I'd stayed, Sarah." Hannah watched Sarah's face, but the other woman said nothing. Hannah hated divorce, hated that she was separated. In a perfect world, a man cherished his wife and put her above himself. In a perfect world, a man was gentle yet strong toward his wife. In a perfect world, marital strife never happened. Too bad the world wasn't perfect. Hannah wished she could live in a world like that. Hannah decided to change the subject.
"Mom had a ring in the keepsake box. Do you know where it is?"
The sympathy on Sarah's face vanished.
"I don't know."
She stood and grabbed a towel from the heap on the floor and began to mop up the water left around the floor drain. The goodwill had fled the room. Sarah's cheeks were red, but Hannah saw no reason for such agitation over a perfectly reasonable question. The ring had to be here somewhere, and she meant to find it. 19. The Amish didn't invent quilts, but they brought their own unique style to the craft. Only solid colors in hues worn in clothing are used, and the bright colors are often paired with black. Hannah Schwartz on PBS's The Art of Quilting.
"Any trouble over the weekend?"
Matt asked Sturgis, who leaned out the window of his car with a cigar clamped in his teeth.
"Quiet, both nights," he said. "Any new leads?"
Sturgis had dark circles under his eyes.
"The media has been hounding me for news, and there's nothing to throw to them to get them off my back."
Matt nodded.
"I brought hard copies of all the data we've collected. I'll go over it again. I don't think the family will be in danger during the day. There are too many people coming and going at the greenhouse. I'll sleep here at night and work the investigation by day." "Ah, I see. And Blake?"
"I'm meeting him at the coffee shop to prepare new questions for some of the family.
Anything else happening?"
"Another burglary."
Matt frowned.
"Where?"
"John Deere.
Some electronics taken. Computers, things easily sold for hard cash. The camera didn't pick up a thing. It looked like it was switched off. But I've got detectives looking over the scene for anything we missed on the once-over."
"The fourth one in 3 months. He's getting bolder."
He hesitated, unsure whether he should voice his suspicions.
"What if it's one of us, Captain?"
Sturgis sighed and leaned his head against the window frame.
"I haven't wanted to think about it, but the thought crossed my mind.
The guy has to be local. He knows when to slip in and how long to stay before getting away. He knows just how long before the canaries show up.
Anyone special you suspect, Detective?"
The things Blake had been buying flashed through his head. A fancy sports car for Gina, a gift to the spa, that $5,000 ring that probably went to Vanessa. All guilt gifts.
Was it possible? He pressed his lips together and shook his head.
Check it out, Beitler. I run a clean department, and I want it to stay that way. If you suspect anyone specific, I want to know.
No one specific, he muttered. He couldn't turn Blake in without evidence, as if Matt didn't have enough to worry about. The captain drove off, and Matt glanced at his watch. He was supposed to meet his mother in an hour. If it really was his mother who had emailed him.
Come on, Ajax.
He whistled to the dog lying under the tree with three cats sleeping atop him, but Ajax just lifted his head and briefly looked at him before plopping down again.
Traitor, he told the canine. You're an insult to dogdom.
Ajax stretched, as if to show him just how little his condemnation hurt.
Stay here, then.
He didn't think Hannah would need the dog during the day, but just in case, it wouldn't hurt to let Ajax stay. Just when he had made the decision to leave the animal, the cat scurried away. Ajax got up and trotted over to stand by the rear door of the SUV expectantly. Matt let him in. Hannah stepped to the back door of the house just as he climbed behind the wheel. Is there a McDonald's around? I'd love an iced coffee. Vanilla.
Nope. No McDonald's. But Rockville has a Burger King. They've got a pretty good iced mocha. And there's a coffee shop in town.
Thanks. I'll check it out. She disappeared inside again. He drove to his place in Rockville. He hadn't been back to the house since Friday. He parked at the street and let Ajax out. The dog chuffed at his feet and whined.
You missed your toys, boy?
Matt unlocked the door and opened it, and stale air rushed out. The dog went inside ahead of him, and by the time Matt shut the door, Ajax had returned with his stuffed cat. Matt went down the hall to his bedroom and packed a small suitcase of clothing before shucking his jeans and taking a long, hot shower. With his hair still wet, he padded in bare feet and jeans to the living room. Caitlin's baby book used to be in a drawer in the coffee table. He sat Indian style on the carpet and pulled everything out of the drawer but didn't find it. His gaze studied the bookcases behind the sofa. No sign of it. Caitlin liked to look at pictures of her mother. Maybe she'd taken it. He got up and went to her room. They'd left in such a hurry, he hadn't made her bed. He straightened the pink ruffle spread and put her shoes in the closet. He glanced around the room but saw only dolls and toys until he got on his hands and knees and looked under the bed. He pulled out the slim volume that chronicled the advent of his daughter into his life. Sitting with his legs straight out in front of him on the floor and his back against the bed, he began to flip through the pages. Ajax flopped down beside him and put his head in his lap.
I miss Caitlin too, boy,
Matt said.
Look, here's her first picture with you.
The photo showed Caitlin 2 days after they got her. Her tiny face was screwed up as Ajax licked her cheek. His muzzle had been pure black then, instead of laced with gray, like now.
She loved you right from the start.
He turned the page. Ah, here was what he was looking for. The baby shower. Seeing the photo of Annalise holding Caitlin made him pause. She looked so happy. 2 years of bliss as a complete family followed Caitlin's arrival.
You big ham, you're in this picture too,
he told Ajax. The dog woofed as though he understood. Most of their church family was there, standing in for the lack of grandparents. Annalise's parents lived in Florida and rarely came to town. There was a picture of the quilt with Caitlin lying on it. Ajax sprawled beside her. The next page held a list of the gifts, but there were several holes regarding who gave what. At least half of the items were not attached to a name, and he remembered why. Annalise had given the job of making this list to 2 little girls from church who wanted to be included. Their childish scrawl showed their age. They'd been about 10. If only he could remember. Maybe Gina would know. He'd ask her about it. He glanced at his watch and realized he'd better get moving. His heart thumped against his ribs. At the coffee shop, he had trouble finding a place to park. For just a moment as he stepped onto the walk, he became that frightened 8-year-old boy. He shook off the sensation and strode with all the confidence he could muster to the door. The aroma of coffee and cinnamon rolls lingered in the air when he stepped inside. He made a quick perusal of the room. Two women sipped frappes at a table in the back, too young to be his mother. A man and a woman, old enough to be his grandparents, were standing at the counter arguing over how many shots the man usually took in his latte. Two men occupied a table by the door. No help there. His stomach plunged. She wasn't here. Glancing at his watch, he saw it was barely 9. Maybe she was just a little late, and maybe he was just a sap. He ordered a black coffee and took it and the newspaper to a table by the window at some distance from the other coffee drinkers. Opening the paper, he noticed his hands were shaking a little. For half an hour, he sat pretending to read the paper and jerking to alert status any time the bell on the door jingled. He checked in with Blake, then settled in to wait. At 9:30, he folded the paper and laid it on the table. He'd wasted half an hour he could have spent with his daughter. As he stood, a woman stepped into the room. He appraised her appearance. About 60, so the age might be close. Her hair looked dyed. Her height seemed about right. Ajax whined at his feet, and he put his hand on the dog's head to calm him. Or maybe to calm himself. He wasn't aware of standing. She looked around and caught his gaze. With an uncertain smile, she approached and looked up at him. Her tongue darted out to wet her lips. Seeing her nervousness gave him courage.
Are you Franny Beitler?
Yes. Are you Matt?
Her low, modulated voice struck him wrong. He'd remembered a higher pitch, but that was a long time ago. Age roughed up vocal cords. Sit down. Can I get you some coffee?
I'd love a mocha.
She fussed with her bag, opening and closing the latch. He ordered the coffee and stood watching her from the corner of his eye. Had her hair been so straight? He used to wrap her curls around his boyish fingers, but maybe she'd had it straightened. The barista handed him the mocha, and he carried it back to their table. His head on his paws, Ajax lay watching her. Matt wished the dog could tell him his impression. Matt handed her the drink, then picked up his own coffee. The strong, hot liquid fortified him. How did you find me?
Through the website, she said. I was surprised to find you still looking.
Why did you leave, Mom? The words burst out of him. You just walked out on us and never looked back.
She stared down at her hands, tightly clenched in her lap. I wasn't cut out for motherhood.
Don't give me that. You were a great mother until the day I came home and found you gone.
His voice vibrated with passion. Let's not talk about the past, Maddie.
She never called him Maddie. Not ever.
He studied her face. The nose wasn't right. His gaze dropped to her chin. He looked for the scar she'd received from falling on ice when he was 7. Her chin was smooth.
You're not my mother.
Her gaze shot up and collided with his. She grabbed her purse and started to rise, but he caught her wrist. Let me go, she said.
Why did you come here and try to impersonate my mother?
Please, you're hurting my wrist. She twisted to try to break free, but his grip was too tight.
I'm a detective. You didn't contact me through the website. You used my personal email at the sheriff's department. I'm going to arrest you unless you tell me why you did this.
He got no joy from the terror in her face, but she'd come here with an agenda, and he meant to find out what it was. He paid me.
Who paid you?
The guy. Older than you, going a little bald. We started talking at a bar in Broad Ripple. He said he wanted to help a friend, and he'd pay good money for it. It seemed harmless enough. Made you think your mom wanted to see you so you weren't so obsessed with finding her.
Harmless.
The disappointment devouring him was anything but harmless. She obviously had no idea what it was like to long for someone the way he longed to find his mother.
Was his name Reese?
He never told me his name. It had to be Reese from the description. What kind of sick puppy would do this to him? He shook his head. The same kind who would beat a defenseless woman. He let go of her wrist.
Get out of here. Count yourself lucky that I don't arrest you.
She scurried out the door without a backward glance while he sat back down and wondered what Reese's motive had been. If he just wanted to inflict pain, he'd manage that.
The region around his heart still ached. But what if Reese had something bigger in mind? Was he trying to divert Matt's attention from the murders? If that was his goal, he'd only made Matt more determined to find evidence that implicated him. He needed Caitlin's arms around his neck. He drove out to the covered bridge and across it to Blake and Gina's house. As his SUV rolled up the driveway, he watched for the sight of Caitlin's bright head. There she was. Pigtails flying, she came bounding down the steps with her smile brighter than the sun overhead. She was small for her age of 5, but the doctor had said not to worry. He pushed the guilt away. Caitlin belonged to him, not Anna. He flung open his door and opened his arms. Caitlin leaped into them and wrapped herself around him like a monkey. She smelled of soap and Cheerios. He buried his face in her neck and nuzzled it until she giggled. Ajax was about to have a seizure in the back seat. Matt opened the door and the dog leaped out. Jumping against Matt's hip, Ajax slicked every part of Caitlin he could reach. She laughed and rubbed his ears. Matt put her down so she could say hello to the dog properly. "I've missed you, Red," he said, touching her bright hair. He couldn't lose her. "My hair's not red, Daddy." She looked up at him as she rubbed Ajax's ears. "It's Titian." "And where did you learn that word?" Every day was an adventure with her. He couldn't miss out on watching her grow up. Hannah didn't even know her. He took her hand and started toward the house. "My teacher called it that. Did you come to take me to preschool?"
"Not today. How's Aunt Gina this morning?"
Caitlin's face stilled. Then the smile vanished. She put her hand over her mouth and whispered through her fingers. "She was crying. Uncle Blake yelled at her." Matt curled his fingers into his palm.
"It's grown-up stuff. Nothing for you to worry about. Are you being good?"
Caitlin nodded. "I help her. Yesterday I brought in all the eggs and made my bed."
"You're a great help, I'm sure. Stay," he told the dog.
He pushed open the screen door and entered the house.
"Gina?"
"In the kitchen." Matt patted his daughter on the bottom. "I need a new picture colored for me to put on my bulletin board. Will you do one for me?" Caitlin's smile came out again.
"Okay."
Her bare feet slapped along the wooden floor, then she disappeared into the living room. Matt turned the other direction, into the kitchen, where he found his sister seated at the table snapping green beans. She didn't turn her face toward him, but he caught the glimmer of wetness on her cheeks.
"Got any fresh coffee?"
"In the pot."
He poured a cup of coffee and joined her at the table.
"When is this going to end, Matt? Every time I think it's over, I find out he's still seeing her."
He could have wrung Blake's neck.
"He told you he was having an affair?"
"Yes, he admitted it."
She swiped at her eyes. "I'm just tired of it. I'm going to see this woman myself. I can't handle any more lies."
"When?"
"As soon as I'm not needed for Caitlin. I hate having her see me upset. When do you think her mother will be gone from town?"
"I don't know. She isn't showing any signs of leaving yet. You could go one evening when I'm here with Caitlin."
"No, I'm being selfish. Your problem is worse than mine. Caitlin belongs to us, not some woman she's never seen. This can wait a few more days."
She snapped another bean, and the sound was like the crack widening in Matt's heart, a crevice that let the terror surge into his throat. He'd do anything to keep his daughter. Anything. 2 days later, a big truck parked in the driveway. The side read, "Fox and Friends." Hannah wanted to wring her hands. Why had she ever agreed to this? It went against everything she'd been taught and was a symptom of the pride she'd allowed to creep into her life.
"What's going on?"
Sarah peered out the window at the truck as men began unloading video equipment.
It's a TV show that's going to interview me."
Hannah wanted to cringe from the judgment in Sarah's eyes when she explained.
"I wrote a book that has sold really well, and I've become something of an expert about Amish quilts. A morning TV show wants to get some footage of me here."
Spots of color appeared on Sarah's face. "We will stay inside. Me and the girls."
"Of course."
Hannah bolted for the door to avoid her censure. Angie followed.
Out on the porch, Hannah leaned against the railing until the crew called her.
"I should have canceled this," she said. "It will be over soon," Angie soothed.
She took out a notebook and went down to greet the hosts of the show. But it wasn't over soon enough for Hannah. 2 hours later, she'd been photographed sitting in the buggy, leaning against the barn, standing by the laundry line, and smiling by the ham hanging in the smokehouse. Limp as the overalls flapping in the breeze on the line, she wanted nothing more than to forget the morning ever happened. The crew and hosts were wonderful, but she knew the interview had been wrong for her, for her family. Once the trucks and cars departed, Hannah wanted to get away. Angie drove her to town, where Hannah pointed out the coffee shop. Plenty of residents would be there. Angie parked the car, and they headed inside. The aroma of coffee beans roasting burned Hannah's throat as soon as she stepped in the door. She glanced around the room. None of the people sipping lattes and checking email paid her the least attention.
"You sure you want to do this?" Angie whispered. "Do you know any of them?"
Hannah was about to say they were all strangers when a man looked up and their eyes locked. Panic fluttered into her throat, and she took an involuntary step back. Noah Whetstone rose from his chair and came toward her. He wasn't smiling. She wanted to flee, to hide in the bushes outside the door where she didn't have to see the betrayal come into his face again. She watched him approach. He wore a long beard, no mustache, and smooth cheeks. So he'd kept the faith. And he'd taken a wife, another woman, someone who deserved him. The beard was a symbol of his married status. His pants were a little dusty, as though he'd already worked a while at the sawmill this morning. And he likely had. It was after 10. After what seemed an eternity, he reached her.
"Hannah, I heard you were back in town, yeah?"
You look well, Noah." Hannah forced a smile, lifting her chin to look him in the eye. He didn't have to know her perfect life had crumbled around her like a rotted board. There was no need to let him know she still carried the shame of how she treated him.
"And you?"
He cleared his throat. "There is room at the table next to mine, if you'd like to sit." He glanced at Angie. "This is your friend?" "Oh, yes, Angie. This is Noah Whetstone. A friend. Angie is my good friend and assistant." His gaze held reproach, but he said nothing about their former relationship.
"You want coffee? I will get it."
Angie plopped into the chair as though the air in the place hadn't just thickened to the consistency of molasses. She said, "I'll take a mocha." "You probably shouldn't do that, Noah. It might look as though we're sharing a meal." He frowned, then shook his head.
"You are still under the ban, yeah? But no matter. I will get it. You can sit at the table next to mine and we can still talk, though I honor the shunning."
"I'll take a nice coffee then." Hannah sank onto the chair he had pointed out. Her hands were shaking. Noah had moved on, too. It wasn't as though she'd ruined his life. Still, it hurt to come face to face with her failures. She watched him take out his cell phone and place a call, then put it back. Maybe he was calling the bishop to come confront her.
"You all right?" Angie asked. "You look like you're about to faint."
"It was just a shock seeing him." "I gather he's more than a friend." "We were engaged. I heard him when I ran off with Reese." Angie studied the young man standing in line.
"You left him for Reese? He's cute, especially if you could get him to shave off those whiskers."
"I like the beard," Hannah said. She'd grown up admiring her father's. Noah came back holding 2 cups of coffee. He set one in front of each of the women, then took his own seat again.
"Thanks."
Hannah took a sip of her coffee. "Who did you marry, Noah?" Hannah knew it would be someone she knew.
"Katie Stoltz. She has been a good wife."
Hannah was relieved he'd done so well for himself.
"I always liked Katie."
"Katie's dad owned the sawmill where Noah worked."
"You're still at the sawmill, then?"
She smiled and pointed to the dust on his jacket.
"Yeah, Katie's father retired a year ago."
"Children?"
"4.
His smile grew broader.
"Wonderful."
She hoped her envy didn't show.
"What about you, Hannah? Are you happy, yeah?"
children? I'm so sorry, Noah, she burst out. I hate what I did to you. I hope you can forgive me. His warm eyes studied her.
I have a good life, Hannah. You did me no lasting harm. I forgave you long ago.
And she knew he had. The Amish way wasn't to wait to offer forgiveness until asked. It was freely extended, regardless. She fingered the picture in the pocket of her skirt, then slowly drew it out and reached across the aisle to show it to him. Do you recognize this child? A line crouched between his eyes, and she could tell he wanted to ask more questions, but he took the picture and gazed down at it.
9, he said finally.
But she has the look of you. Who is she? I don't know for sure, but since she looks like me, I thought she might be related. He studied her face, then nodded.
Your cousin Mary. She lives here in town. Might the child be hers?
Hannah's memory went back to the day of Moe's funeral. When Hannah had asked Mary about a husband or children, sadness had tugged at her mouth when she said she was single and childless. Could it be she'd given up one for adoption? Mary and Hannah looked enough alike to be sisters, but how would Mary's child have gotten the quilt? Matt saw Hannah sitting with Angie near an Amish guy as soon as he entered the coffee bar. What did he have to be jealous about? He'd never even kissed her. But all the rationalization in the world didn't make the hot squeeze in his gut go away, especially when he caught the intent expression on her face. She was tucking that dratted picture back into her purse. His first lie had started him on a slippery slope to perdition. If he'd been honest the first time he saw the picture of Caitlin, what would have happened? The barista handed over his coffee. Hannah still hadn't seen him, so he walked over to be introduced. As he approached, he recognized the man's face under the straw hat as one of the guys who worked the counter at the lumber yard. Matt struggled to remember if he'd ever taken Caitlin in with him.
"Mind if I join you?" he asked.
Hannah finally noticed he was on the planet. Her smile seemed strained, and he wondered if she'd felt anything when he'd held her. Maybe the attraction between them was all on his side. But he didn't think he imagined her response. He slid into the seat beside her. Once he set his coffee on the table, he reached across to offer his hand to the guy.
"Matt Beitler, sheriff's detective."
"Noah Whetstone. I've seen you in the lumber yard."
"Yeah, I put a deck on the house last year."
The conversation fizzled as Matt tried to think of what to say without mentioning his daughter. Before he could think of a safe topic, Noah rose.
"I must get back to work. Say hello to your cousin, Hannah."
He nodded to Angie and Matt, picked up his coffee cup, and left.
"I didn't mean to run him off," Matt said.
Liar, liar. That was exactly what he'd hoped for. He'd have liked to put a hedge around Hannah and keep every other guy at arm's length. Maybe that was why Reese acted so possessive. "You didn't."
"It looked like you were deep in conversation."
He nearly winced when he saw Angie grin. Even if Hannah was too innocent to recognize his interest, her savvier friend saw everything. "I've known him all my life."
"They were engaged,"
Angie put in. Her smile widened, and she glanced at Matt as if to see him squirm. "That was a long time ago. He's married with 4 kids now." It almost sounded as though she didn't want him to worry. Matt couldn't help but smile. Maybe she was transparent, too. And Angie understood. She stood.
"Listen, Hannah, since Matt is here, I'm going to go back to the house and call the producer to see if they got all they needed today. Why don't you have Matt take you over to see Irene? You've been wanting to go. She's probably got some of your mom's quilts. See if you can borrow them for a few days for me to photograph them."
"But I should go back and work on the quilt, too."
"Yeah, you should, but you're not going to. So just get your sleuthing out of your system. See you two later."
Angie grabbed her coffee and sashayed out of the coffee bar. "You sure you don't mind taking me over to Irene's?" How is he going to get out of this one? Irene would recognize Caitlin in one glance.
"Not a problem. I need to question Irene myself. You just need to borrow quilts?"
"I was going to ask her about the little girl, but now there's no need." She blinked rapidly at the moisture flooding her eyes.
"Why not?"
Was she giving up? One of my cousins. We look a lot alike. I think the girl might be hers. She might have given her up for adoption.
I'm sorry. He reached across the table and took her hand in both of his. He rubbed his thumb along her palm. One part of him was rejoicing that he wouldn't be found out,